Hello, and welcome to episode 18 of Modern Media Review. I'm Robin Gibson.
And I'm Sean Golightly.
Before we start with this week's review, we'd just like to do our usual plugging and say if you like the podcast, listen to us on YouTube, subscribe on YouTube, visit the website, which is modernmediareview.com, where you can hear the podcast. You can also listen to them on Spotify.
iTunes,
that's right. And we're on Twitter, @review_modern. And we're on Facebook, if you like Facebook. And that's about all the plugging we need to do. This week, we're going to talk about a couple.
We're not going to plug our merchandise.
We haven't got any merchandise, unlike Kanye West.
Yeah, a lot. Which leads us into what we're covering this week, Robin.
In reverse, yeah. We're going to do a couple of music documentaries. One on BBC Four last week.
Well, I was going to say to you, just as we go into this, as Scorsese said, if you want to make a great film, start at the end and work backwards.
Which is what Rakim said at the end of the second document. We're getting into Time's Arrow territory here, aren't we? Yes, we're going to talk about John Lee Hooker, Boogeyman, which was on BBC Four, one of their many reasonably admirable music documentaries. And we're going to talk about Word is Bond, which is a slightly different history of hip-hop, which was on Sky Arts the other day.
Two of my favourite channels.
Yes, I know they are, yeah. Let's not start at the end and work our way back to the beginning or we'll be here for too long and we'll be doing everything in reverse. Let's start with John Lee Hooker, Boogeyman.
Which you thought was formulaic, and I disagree.
Well, I thought it was formulaic in that it was a BBC Four formula documentary about it. Recently, I've seen like Woody Guthrie, Motley Hoople, Chaz and Dave, umpteen of them. I mean, even not that long ago, they did individual documentaries on the guitar, the bass and the drums. I mean, maybe they're going to do some on the individual guitar strings soon. I don't know. I just thought like they're always the same. There's not enough music. Maybe they don't have enough rights. They've always got stock footage, which I think we could talk about a bit later on. And they've always got the kind of same set of talking heads, although John
Lee Hooker.
No, Robin,
this one was a little bit different because I was expecting the same range of talking heads wearing the same clothes they do in about, or Don Letts wearing the same clothes in about 20 different documentaries, you know.
It's the same clip. There's no way they could shovel Don Letts into this one talking about sound systems. It just wasn't going to be able to squeak in.
But they did have the ultimate
rock journal talking head on at Charles Char Murray.
In fairness to them, they had different stock footage of various parts of sort of like Mississippi and Missouri, which I thought was quite good. They had Keith Richards on, who doesn't normally sort of turn up for these outings.
He turns up in these blues ones. He always does. I'm sorry if I'm a bit throaty, by the way. I was trying to practice the Keith Richards laugh, but I haven't managed to get it right.
You're blowing your voice doing it, Robin.
You could virtually run through a checklist for these sort of documentaries, and I wrote some down, right, from the beginning.
Cottonfields?
Quote, he's the essence of black American music, check, because they say that about all sorts of people. Born in Mississippi, but no one knows exactly what date he was born on.
I do like that. That always appeals to me.
Pictures of people farming pigs and cows and cotton picking, sort of authenticity, check. Old film of Son House, check. Growing up in church, father was a minister and a sharecropper. Even better, right? John Lee Hooker's son, John Lee Hooker Jr.,
is a preacher.
Turned out to also be a preacher.
I like.
Preacher and son, it said, didn't it? And then Charles Char Murray pops up, you know. Oh, yeah, his dad thought the devil lived in a guitar case. Classic mixture of the sacred and the profane. Check.
I like that.
That's a cliche. Then Keith comes on, telling you how he played some funny open tunings. He always says that.
Well, Keith also likes playing some funny open tunings.
Yeah, because he copied them.
Like some cats like doing that, man.
Yeah, some cats, yeah. Probably some chicks nowadays as well.
Well, Keith did say that when he was talking about John Lee Hooker. He said, you know, he brought his own satin sheets to the to every hotel room, and there's one time he's in there with two chicks in bed with him, pretending he's playing guitar, you know.
Like, teaching them the guitar.
Yeah, teaching them the guitar, which I thought was great. I mean, when they talk about, because we're going to get on to Word is Bond in a bit, and one of the criticisms of hip-hop and rap is that it's misogynistic and all the rest of it. But
not
when
like
you've got
Iron Maiden or something like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, or Keith going on about chicks in bed, man, you know, and Eric Burdon going, hey, when I'm talking about rocking you all night, I'm not talking about rocking you in my arms like a baby, I'm talking about bringing the walls down, man.
And shagging some dame.
Dame.
And then after that, They've got some old producer on, actually showing you how they play the music with an acoustic guitar. Always extremely boring, that.
Well, Robin, I'm a bit into... I also like, apart from watching Sky Arts and BBC Four, I also... shows you what I do with my day. I also like watching Wheeler Dealers, where they actually take engines apart. And I find that sort of stuff quite interesting.
What?
So, well, I do like... Yeah, I do like the idea that John Lee Hooker played on the upstroke rather than the downstroke.
Sorry, mate, I find that's like explaining to me how Hemingway used his typewriter. I don't really care, you know. What I care about is what it sounds like.
Okay.
Then they get on to part two, right? Unskilled jobs, headed to Detroit, like, you know, the industrial north. Then you have pictures of jumping jive joints, which has absolutely nothing to do with the sort of blues John Lee Hooker played. Urbanisation. Well, and then they start talking about race records and black people as consumers and blah, blah, blah.
I appreciate that they're ticking a lot of boxes. However, there is an interesting sort of social historical aspect to this, is that...
Well, don't we know it?
Well, yeah.
I've heard of it 20 times.
But the point is that it was sort of immigrants within the same country, not really being immigrants. It's that move from, you know, an agricultural background into an industrial setting, and people listening to music hearkening back. You know, it's a little bit like people moving across, you know, from overseas, playing music that reminds them of home a little bit. So I thought that aspect of it was quite interesting, you know.
But I've heard it all before. And then you get the urban blues, don't you, with a clip of Muddy Waters playing Hoochie Coochie Man. Then you find out they don't want to get any royalties. Check. I reckon they should have brought in the guy from League of Gentlemen, Les McQueen. He could just have said it's a shit business, really, and that would have summed it all up.
Or the guy from the Far Show going, hardest job in the world, music, hardest job in the world.
And then we get the move to Europe, you know, and then you see the classic clips of the white audience sitting down looking a bit square and dancing really badly, you know. I thought the most interesting bit of it when they came to Europe, Van Morrison popped up and you made an interesting comparison to, you know, that I'd grown up in poverty-stricken working-class Belfast, and he identified with the music, and I kind of buy that from him, I think.
And also, Van Morrison, not renowned as a talking head on these sort of like BBC Four shows, so I think that was pretty good to get that. But also Eric Burdon the same, you know, a guy from, you know, northeast working class background who could relate to that. And it is pretty stark music, the blues, you know. I mean, I can't admit to being a fan, but, you know, it's pretty stark and stripped down and bare, and it has that feeling of sort of like, a bit like the sort of like electronic music that came out of Sheffield in the 80s, you know.
What, you mean like Warp Records? Oh no, you mean things like the Human League.
Yeah, before they got Phil Oakey and the two girls singing.
Phil Oakey,
yeah.
Yes, well, he was in the... that's a very interesting analogy.
Well, it just struck me, that was all.
Blues is like, yeah, I see what you mean, sort of.
Well, it's got a hard sort of like edge to it. I mean, the antithesis of that is the sort of like wallowing in it, in your emotions, country music.
But that was from a hard background as well.
Yeah. I know, but a totally different take on it. You know, as Billy Connolly used to sing, my mother was a cripple in Nashville, you know.
Was there even enough of John Lee Hooker's music in the film? I'm not convinced there was. They just went through all the appropriate chapters for a story like this, ending up with... the final part of the list is when there's a revival. He's in the, you know, he's probably had to sell his cutlery or something to keep make ends meet, and, you know, he's on Skid Row, and then suddenly CDs, a lot of this is to do with CDs. CDs come out and all this music gets reissued, and then he's a revival and he records with all these people like Carlos Santana and Bonnie Raitt and loads of famous people, and he makes a massive album called The Healer. He's got loads of money, and it's all very good if it's the first time you've heard the story.
It just reminds me that, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same, in that this is true of, like, say, like someone like Johnny Cash, who went through a hiatus in the sort of like 70s and early 80s, and then with those American recordings made a massive comeback with these covers like Hurt and things like that. I thought the interesting thing about the importation of black American blues into Britain in the 60s was that this then became exported back to the sort of like folk scene and the festivals of the 60s, whereas black kids were actually moving on to Motown, Stax, soul music, you know, the whole black power movement was taking over in the consciousness of young people, when this black music that was basically old hat to a lot of these kids was making a huge impact in, you know, culture, the culture of the world, you know, a world culture type thing. Do you know what I mean?
Well, European culture, yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, well, that's actually, there's a good point there, because one of his daughters said, in Europe, he wasn't just this old black man. He was just John Lee Hooker. He didn't encounter the racism he found in the States. Whereas Charles Sharp Murray, who's sort of like is stuck in some kind of limbo, right? When the blues made rock and roll, he's totally unhappy. He's bemoaning the fact that, oh, you know, young black audiences in America were somewhere else entirely. But of course they were, because they're not just going to keep listening to old guys in hats from the 50s, are they? And then he actually even said at one point about the scene in the 70s where everything was going to pot, in his view. He's saying soul music was beginning to lose ground to disco. I mean, shame, you know, how dare they?
Well, this is the thing about music, is that it does change. I mean, otherwise we'd all be listening to the Ink Spots from the 1940s, you know? And you can't just keep things the same all the time. And this is an interesting segue, I think, Robin, into Word is Bond, which was about lyrics and English and the power of language, which I think both you and I purport to be wordsmiths, really. So
you
many
speak
people...
for yourself, mate.
Yeah, well, possibly. But the whole thing about a lot of people's views is that language can't change. This is why we have style books in journalism and everything should be cut and dried and there's a specific way to do things. You know, like the word literally now can literally mean anything.
Well, yeah? It could mean either. Of course,
do you know what
it
I mean?
Can. So that's things... because it does. Because the use has changed the meaning.
Well, exactly. So things have to change. It's in the nature of everything. And this was just the point that I thought was interesting about Word is Bond. A different perspective, really.
Yeah, because it was a hip-hop documentary that had elements of history in it, but really it was talking about the lyricism of hip-hop and rap. It didn't attempt to be a linear, chronological... The sort of thing BBC Four would do, you know, story of rap, where it starts in the Bronx with people breakdancing, and do you know what I mean? It would just
spraying subway trains.
And they'd show you a clip of Blondie doing Rapture, which
yeah.
is... One of their, like Don Letts is one of their all-purpose things, because that clip also fits into punk and any sort of New York music documentary as well. Anyway, I was looking at Internet Movie Database, and not an easy thing to say that.
No.
And it says, Word is Bond explores the many dimensions of hip-hop poetics, which sounds a wee bit pretentious, but that's what they were trying to do, was look at the lyrical side of it. And they had some big names like Nas and J. Cole.
However...
they didn't have the biggest names, though, did they? Like they didn't have Jay-Z or Kanye West or any of the really new names.
I know that you're a fan of Nas, and my only reference to Nas was having watched Pimp My Ride, where he got a...
Well, we're not Wheeler Dealers, no.
No, he wasn't on Wheeler Dealers, no. He was on Pimp My Ride. And he wanted a Mercedes 190E pimped up into the old school style, you know, which was quite good. And they called it the Illmatic Machine.
Yeah, because that's his famous classic debut album, which he's never kind of quite been able to surpass in
exactly.
25 years. There was a serious take on this. They started off with J. Cole and Nas, and, you know, quite serious young men, although Nas isn't that young now, as he's sort of a bit fat, actually. And I quite liked the way...
No fat shaming on this show, mate.
No, but, you know, if you look at all the folk who were talking in this, the stuff they were saying was really...
Hang on a minute. Were you one of those stewards at the London Marathon who was shouting at fat people going, if you'd done a bit more training, your T-shirt would have fitted?
Yeah, yeah. I like to go to Nas gigs and shout, talk, fat boy, talk. And the things they were saying I thought was really interesting because, yeah, the film was a bit... Would you say it was a bit worthy, a bit earnest?
They slightly overreached ambition-wise. But it was a nice break from the template, to be honest. And the
a
thing
nice
I like
from the linear time of BBC Four documentaries.
And I liked also the fact that it was a concentration on the lyrics as an art form, really, and also how hip hop, rap, the whole culture is oral, which also linked back into the John Lee Hooker thing about not being able to read and write. Do you know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
Exactly. Although these guys can read and write. I say these guys because...
It was a bit thin on the ground, woman-wise, wasn't it?
Woman-wise, they had Rhapsody, who's been around for a long time. And yeah, I mean, given that it's a new film, I was a bit surprised that they didn't have a bit more of that. But again, they were taking it seriously, and maybe they didn't think Nicki Minaj or Cardi B really suited the purpose. I think they would have, but maybe they didn't. I made a couple of notes about what people said, and Pusha T was talking about cadences. J. Cole talked about foreshadowing. LP from Run the Jewels was talking about language and metaphor and comedy. And his colleague, Killer Mike, was referring to Chaucer and Twain. You don't get Liam Gallagher talking about this sort of thing, do you?
Not publicly, but I'm sure at home, in a quiet moment, in more reflective moments, possibly he does. These guys, I think they were trying to reach out of it and looking at an art form. Basically, they were saying that Bob Dylan is revered because of his poetic lyrics, whereas...
Which no one understands.
No, I don't, certainly. But then I don't understand James Joyce either. I don't know if I'm a Philistine or whether I just find it boring.
I don't think you're meant to understand either of those. You just take it as it comes and let it sort of soak in. I thought the film was a bit long, but I think at its best it was really good. But it took this geographical point, didn't it, where it jumped around from city to city, and it was all a bit fast cut, that aspect of it. Then they basically got to, I've forgotten where they were, but they were... When they got on to Tech N9ne, who's hardly the biggest name in the world, although he's quite a big rapper, they suddenly burst. It was a bit like Britain's Favourite Sweets when they did a big piece on the Swizzles factory. They suddenly started showing you how he owned this car wash. He said, "This is my car wash," and people come from miles around. It's top notch, and his merchandise.
And then they went into the warehouse, which is just full of merchandise, which he was shamelessly promoting.
Yeah, there was a couple of chunks that they lost the plot, and it looked a bit like product placement, even though Tech N9ne actually did show you how to rap by taking breaths, and he was absolutely brilliant. There was a couple of segments like that, and there was a couple of... Like, one bit, it said... It had a big caption on the screen saying, 1986, crack. And you thought, oh, they're going to get into the influence of crack on the scene. And then it just didn't say anything about it. Nothing happened. And they did have a couple of those old sort of BBC Four style, like when they went to Detroit, they pointlessly showed you a shot of the old Motown building.
Yeah. There was another similarity, which I quite liked between the two documentaries, and shows you how difficult it is sometimes to be different. Is that, do you remember when Canned Heat and John Lee Hooker were recording the album in, what, 71? I can't remember the name of it.
Hooker and Heat.
Yeah. Well, when they were talking about Punch recording on Word is Bond, it was that idea of just spitting it straight out, no breaks, no overdubbing. And I like the whole idea of just playing it, and, you know, it was organic, really, in that respect, because especially with things like, well, we're working on Audacity, and you can cut and paste and put things in and all the rest of it. And I like
that
idea.
No, we never do that.
Well, we never do that because we don't need to. We're professionals, mate.
Yeah, it's all one take here, mate.
And I just like that idea about the similarity about getting it out there and feeling it.
Yeah, no, I think it was good on the whole, you know. I don't know if many people would think about comparing rap to John Lee Hooker with Canned Heat, but the one bit I thought was quite funny was when they got into the discussion about ghostwriting, because recently, I don't know how big a Drake fan you are, Sean, but...
Massive.
Yeah, there's been a lot of hoo-ha over the past couple of years about whether Drake writes his own raps or not. And, like, Big Daddy Kane, who was one of the real old-school guys they had on, he don't like ghostwriters, did he? But the modern people didn't seem too bothered. And there was a great quote
I didn't have a problem with this at all, Robin, because for me, people sing other people's songs or use other people's stuff and all the rest of it. And as long as you're getting credited, I don't see the problem. And this thing, again, reminded me of the sampling thing, where the Stones were massive fans of John Lee Hooker and, you know, Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters and all the rest of it, and credited them. Whereas Led Zeppelin, first, they must have been the first samplers in history, because they basically just took all those sort of like old blues themes and claimed them as their own.
Yes, well, they did for a while, didn't they, until they got rumbled.
Yeah.
At least the Stones took those guys on tour with them and gave them songwriting credit.
Yeah.
But the thing about this is, I just looked up a Drake track from his last album, Scorpion, and the track Mob Ties, it's got 12 writers credited. So who's saying who wrote what?
I appreciate there's a sort of like thing about authenticity, because the whole thing that they were underlining so many of these guys was that this is me, this is my feeling, I'm putting it out there and all the rest of it. So how it sounds fake if it's coming, my words are coming out of somebody else's mouth. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you want to take the very serious young man, J. Cole, he said, you're in the zone, it's not really you speaking, it's you speaking, but it's the real you, the non-ego you. The soul you.
Which I thought was brilliant.
The you that's connected to God.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
See, you don't get Keith Richards saying that either.
No, he'd be on about some cat man who came around and, you know, with some chicks.
The documentary was missing Keith, obviously, because If you read his autobiography, you'll find out that he thinks he is black.
Well, isn't he?
No, but he thinks he is. Yeah. It's a hard one to square up that, but that's his viewpoint, so we'll leave him with it. But on the ghostwriting thing, actually, there was a great quote from Vince Staples, who's one of the newer rappers in it. And he just said, look, who wrote Rapper's Delight? Not the fuckers rapping it. So who cares? I thought, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with that. I thought they were being a bit precious about the whole thing. I understand where they're coming from, but, you know, really?
Yeah, exactly. But on the whole, I thought it was very good.
Absolutely. I think it was a nice attempt to do something differently. And also to give the whole hip-hop culture a much-needed sort of, like, tilt towards, well, not within the movement itself or the culture itself, but for somebody like me, that, you know, there is an art to this and all the rest of it, and give it some kudos that's been sadly lacking in mainstream media, I think.
Well, you know, on the rock scene, what they used to say is it's not really music at all. It's just people talking. I did feel sorry at the end they had going back to the time going backwards thing, they had a little interview with the young Nas after he'd made Illmatic, and he was saying, I want to work with everyone, I want to work with the Beatles.
Tough one, that.
He still hasn't been able to do it. Maybe he could work with Keith Richards.
Yeah, with some open tunings, yeah?
Yes.
Get some chicks in, get some cats in and some chicks and, you know, like, make some music, man.
At one point, Rakim from Eric B and Rakim said, talked to Scorsese about how to make a movie, and he says, you start at the end and you work your way back, and that's how he was talking about...
beating writer's block, wasn't it?
And in terms of doing that, we've done it the other way around. We started at the beginning.
Well, this is where... I said at the beginning we should start from the end and work our way backwards, you know, but you wouldn't have that. So you're doing a template podcast here, Robin.
Yeah, you can check off all the elements. Check, 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 and we've worked our way from the beginning to the end.
Right to the end,
man. Quite a challenge, though.
Well, listen, I'm off to get some chicks right with my satin sheets and get some cats round.
Someone bring in the wheels.
Yeah.
Shooters. Some cats with some wheels and shooters, yeah?
Yeah.
And you can shag some dame. But there's nothing misogynistic about any of it.
No. That's rock, man.
Okay, well, on that, we can say thanks very much for listening.
If you got this far.
If you got this far, which I'm sure you have. And we'll be back next week with something
else. Different.
Something different, just like this week. Yeah. And for the time being, cheerio and...
thanks for listening.
Goodbye.